I live in a state where it's required CEUs every year to maintain certification and work inside of a hospital facility. So there's a lot of pros that come with that, whereas people have to maintain a certain amount of involvement with the growth of their field. But I think that underlines a big concern with why is a state law making you interested in your field?
What if one conversation could save a life? What if one new process or new product could save a patient from surgical harm? Broadcasting from a hospital basement near you, you are listening to the Beyond Clean podcast, the global voice of sterile processing. Each week we spotlight the best practices, products and people from around the world who are disrupting our profession and helping you fight dirty. Every instrument, every time. Join us as we have the kinds of conversation that matter and give our industry the kind of voice that it deserves. Nyt on aika mennä puhdastakin puhtaammaksi. And now it's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Sarah B. Cruz, second shift sterile processing supervisor at Mid-State Medical Center in Meriden, Connecticut. Sarah started her career in healthcare as a veterinary technician. She is an avenger in patient safety, a fighter of all microbial life, and a leader against the mundane settling of the status quo. Sarah is certified from CBSPD and is passionate about inspiring CS techs who are in a similar position as she once was. Those feeling like they don't know the next step, are contemplating if sterile processing was even the right choice, and are seeking inspiration to keep moving forward. Hank, this is going to be a great one. Lindsay had a chance to talk to Sarah and recognized a great deal of passion in her. And I love what she says here in her bio, a leader against the mundane settling of the status quo. For a group of disrupting podcasters, that's exactly what we want to hear.
Yeah, that entire bio, I'm just sitting here thinking like, yep, no surprise that we tracked you down and we want to give you a platform to talk into our audience, because these are the people, these are the game changers that are going to disrupt the industry in a way that is going to push us forward, like you said, Justin. So I don't want to waste any time. I want to get to this interview and I want to put a spotlight on all the awesome insights that Sarah's going to give our folks today.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST, a closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Sarah Cruz, second shift sterile processing supervisor at Mid-State Medical Center. And Sarah, I think I said this to you before we got started with the interview, but the topic for today's podcast is one that is really quite shocking that we haven't discussed already in the past. And so as I introduce you, I want to thank you for making sure that we cover really these shift dynamics. And specifically, I've always said that second shift supervisors in the squeeze between first and third shifts. So thanks for coming on the show today.
Oh, yeah, it's a real pleasure. I'm really excited to shine a light on this ongoing topic. And it's huge. It's huge. Every shift's important inside of a hospital. So I can't wait to discuss it.
And I know you had a chance to speak with Lindsay before we got started as we were kind of looking for different people to come onto the podcast and interview. And it's also great to hear from somebody who's working on the front line. We're definitely putting an emphasis on getting more and more of those voices on the podcast. But maybe start with describing the special dynamic and that importance around second shift in an SPD.
I think that's a great way to start just because, you know, second shift is a hard shift and it's not saying it's any harder than first or any less difficult than third. It just has a different set of priorities. And I mean, they pay a second shift differential for a reason. You know what I mean? So it's already a pretty tough shift. And the dynamic of second shift coming on midday is almost like a huge swing shift. You know, the hospital doesn't stop between 9 and 5. And the people that work it really have to try to live a lifestyle in work during the time that most people are out of work. So you have to figure out how to have that life-work balance and then still bring 100% of yourself into the workforce at a time when most people are going home.
Yeah, that's right. And I mentioned at the beginning of the show before we went live here that I started my career as a second shifter, and I was going to school in the morning, and I was working in the evenings, and then I was working every other weekend, which meant I had 2 weekends a month in the evenings. It was long stretches of time where I felt like I never saw the sunset, and it was great. On like off days when you're on like a Wednesday afternoon randomly, you're not in work, and you're like, ah, that's what it looks like to see the sunset. It's beautiful. You totally miss that as a second shifter. So that balance that you're talking about, you know, living your life in times and working at times when a lot of the rest of the world feels like, and I'm sure, you know, third shift definitely feels this way, you know, but everybody else is getting off work as we're coming in. And just that mental dynamic is interesting.
I am very grateful for 24-hour grocery stores. I'm not going to lie.
So as a supervisor, though, you know, it's a different perspective even than a second shift technician in that you're responsible for those inter-shift dynamics, you know, coming off of first shift and just the crazy day that they had. And I know, and I remember as a technician, you know, walking into the department and maybe it was a busy day on first shift and all of these anxieties and concerns start rising up in second shift, and that's when those shift wars start. And so I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about those challenges in a sterile processing department, like potential causes and then also some solutions that you've seen.
Shift wars. If I could write a book about shift wars, I'd probably need about 5 or 6 volumes in alphabetical order. It's an ongoing struggle in every facility. And really, shift wars are just a personification of an ununified department. When departments and shifts come in, and if you create space for that room where someone feels like they're doing a solo struggle, that's where this almost martyr system comes in, where it's like, it's only me, I'm out here, no one's helping me. And it really starts to ununify the entire department. So it's important to make sure that they don't just feel like they're out there by themselves. And that's where leadership is even more important. So I think the first thing to look at is something that I call situational concern versus a personal problem. And you can't fix people. You know, people are going to be exactly who they are. And if someone has a bad attitude or they're having a bad day, you can't help that. Whereas if you pull it back and make it a situational concern, you can literally address any aspect of a growing issue in a department. So, for example, if you have the person on a, let's do a common shift war, first shift versus second shift, you know, perfect. First shift doesn't feel like second shift really gets how busy they are, and second shift doesn't understand why their first shift didn't do any sets today. So instead of blaming it on a person, let's look at the situation. It sounds like second shift doesn't understand the responsibilities of first shift, and first shift doesn't understand the key goals for second shift success. So there is your ununified department. Now, if we made that a personal issue, I couldn't do anything with it. But now, because we're taking a step back and we're looking at the whole picture as a department, not a shift, we can address issues and even as leadership offer more support.
I'm glad that you brought up leadership in that topic, because it is critical. And I remember back when I was a sterile processing manager and I had three different shift supervisors, I really impressed upon those folks the critical need for consistent leadership as supervisors across each shift, because inevitably it was somebody's personality. Like, let's just say that it was on first shift and everyone in the department felt like that was the cool supervisor, right? Like the good mom, the nice mom, or the nice dad. And like everyone thought that shift just got away with murder because their supervisor, like for whatever reason, you know, gave the impression of more lax, not as on top of things with breaks and lunches. And so even that dynamic, that's not even the inter coworker dynamic, but it's the response to leadership because of some type of inconsistency can really feed in to those shift wars, like what you said. And so, yeah, leadership is way more important, even on shifts that you're not the supervisor for, than folks realize, I think.
I agree. And it's important to have the shift war be addressed primarily in leadership. So, you know, when we're having handoffs between first and second shift, that moment should be visible by staff because they can see that, hey, my shift supervisor is working with this shift supervisor. We are all working towards the same goal, which is always patient safety. And on top of that, it's, okay, this supervisor understands what I went through today, so I don't have to stand up for myself, so to speak.
Sarah, I'm so excited that we're talking about shift wars. And I think one of the things that's important for sterile processing professionals to understand is that shift wars don't only happen in sterile processing. They also happen in surgical services as well. Work is left for the next shift. Information is withheld, leaving a mess for the next shift. All these things play into the dynamics between shifts of various departments in the healthcare facility. I think one of the things that you are specifically keen on is making sure that your staff feels like they have the tools that they need to succeed and also feel motivated. Talk to me a little bit about why motivation matters and what you do to specifically motivate your team in sterile processing.
Well, for sake of sounding trite, it's all about the motivation. And if I could underline motivation 600 times, I would, because maintaining motivation at the beginning of the shift to the end of the shift is what keeps myself and my colleagues actively engaged in common goals, which also helps feed into the shift war issue. If we are motivated and actively involved with the tasks at hand, there's no room to wonder what we are doing more than the other person. So to effectively motivate someone, they have to see the type of almost attitude that you expect from them. So by creating, you know, visual markers of success, I always try to portray the type of goals that I want my shift to achieve. No one should go home at the end of the night wondering if they did enough or if their sets are good enough, because the only bad set is an upset. And then those upset employees, they're going to come back the next day and they're going to give what they gave the day before. And if it doesn't go appreciated or even recognized, it won't be as good, and certainly won't be as good as the way that the patients need it to be to have, you know, stellar, safe outcomes.
And along those lines, I love that you mentioned the fact that you are cognizant of the fact that employees bring with them whatever was left over from the day before. They bring with the attitudes, they bring with the insights or the lack thereof, the complacency, the boredom, perhaps, to flip the coin a little bit. Something that you've mentioned in the past, and I think that this touches on just the amount of sheer passion that you have and that spark that you maintain, is the all too real topic of simply becoming complacent and becoming bored and feeling stuck in your role, having maybe the passion, but not having that inspiration to keep going. And it sounds also like you do a really great job at keeping educational opportunities engaging for your staff. Can you provide some insights on keeping the education piece engaging and central to the life of your department?
I live in a state where it's required CEUs every year to maintain certification and work inside of a hospital facility. So there's a lot of pros that come with that, whereas people have to maintain a certain amount of involvement with the growth of their field. But I think that underlines a big concern with why is a state law making you interested in your field? You know, you don't take your test, become a central sterile tech, and that's it. No, the field is ever growing. It always has new information in it. And even the information that was once there might not even be applicable anymore. So education is the most central part to central sterile processing. It further fuels the fact that our field isn't one-dimensional. And education is key to patient safety. So how do you get people excited to continue to learn in a field where education is limitless?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Sarah. And I guess I can weigh in, you know, again, from the frontline perspective and just say it's important for our industry to think more broadly even than CEs in terms of education. So, yes, continuing education is critical. It's mandated in many states, to your point. But there's so much to learn about the field that today is not, quote unquote, approved for continuing education credits, and yet it's still tremendously valuable. And even the conversations that we're having today about shift wars and shift dynamics, just because that's not packaged in a CE program doesn't mean that someone can't benefit and can't make their department or their own just individual personal lives better. So that's a great point. And I guess I can add on that to say I have seen a lot of success in democratizing education in our department. So it's not just the department educator, it's not just the department supervisor or manager who's responsible to educate a team, but really expecting, teaching, and giving opportunity to every technician in the department to learn how to educate themselves and learn how to educate each other. Have you ever seen anything like that in your facility?
Yes, and I want to almost magnify the word today that you said. You know, today it can be such a broad term. Is it the 9 to 5? Is it from when you woke up to when you went to bed? And today even pertains to the moments during our shift where there are learning opportunities, not just by management, but by colleagues and coworkers right next to you. Sometimes people can't learn because they don't know the questions to ask. So it's almost part of our responsibility as people with experience or individuals in leadership to think of what information someone may need to know that they don't even know that they're missing out on. So, for example, if someone's using a total knee set and they're taking a look at an impactor, I might take advantage of the fact that I say, hey, you know, this impactor is used to insert a trial, and it may have cement on it. Let me show you where cement might show up. Oh, and it's even better when I actually go to show them and there's cement there. So I feel like such a win. But at the same time, it's, you know, they might not even know where to look because they don't understand the piece of instrumentation that they're looking at. So education and engaging in the central department life is very broad, from the statewide mandate even down to that one impactor inside of a total knee, that one opportunity for learning that would have been missed if management or leadership or associating technicians weren't engaged in the overall goal of success in their department on their shift.
Sarah, one of the other interviews that we've conducted for season 7 was with Marjorie Wall, and she made a really important point about how setting staff up for success is more than just setting expectations and expecting them to meet those expectations. She gave a great example about how some instrumentation that she had cleaned wound up being dirty once it got to surgery, and the surgery department was, you know, set on getting her fired for that job. But her manager said, okay, let's take a step back and let's think about the bigger picture here. She was set up to fail. We did not train her properly. She did not have the tools that she needed for success. And so instead, they gave her an opportunity to dive into that educational piece and really learn what she needed to know to be successful at that job. And you're speaking to that perfectly and giving people the opportunity to succeed by providing the tools and resources that they need in order to do so. That's a perfect picture of a good leader.
Thank you, Lindsay, because I think it's so important to recognize that reactively fixing a problem is not proactively going to take care of it when it could happen again. It's so much easier to make sure that people have what they need to really succeed and have the outcome they want. Nobody wants to do bad work, especially when they're passionate in their field, but by shortchanging the experience and just reactively correcting error really just, it serves patient safety in a way that it doesn't deserve. We should be proactively addressing why things may happen instead of reactively addressing why they are happening.
Yeah, and speaking of proactive, I want to switch gears a little bit here and talk about how proactive you have been on social media, and you really popped up on my radar, you know, here recently. And again, if anybody knows me personally or watches the conversation on LinkedIn, you know, I'm addicted to LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram when it comes to sterile processing. So if anybody starts moving around in that space, I see them, and if they're doing great work, I want to get connected with and encourage them. And so you are one of those folks. I'd like to get your perspective, you know, as kind of a new voice in the sterile processing social media space. Why did you decide to get involved, and what value have you seen or do you expect on your time spent in advocating for sterile processing online?
Well, I'll start with the fact that even though I am technically a millennial, I am not technically savvy. By any means. I made a web page and I launched it. And if my laptop could have caught on fire, it would have definitely caught on fire, because none of the links worked and the pages wouldn't load. And it was the biggest learning curve of my life, even more so from moving from veterinary science to central sterile processing. And oh my gosh. But with that being said, Instagram and Facebook are much easier platforms. And I actually have a webpage that's up and not on fire. And I think the biggest thing that set me off into that direction was an article that you wrote, Hank, about why it's important to have a social media presence and really shine that light and make a space for your voice. And I started to realize, especially when I moved into a leadership position, that there were a tremendous amount of individuals that have awesome ideas. Just, we run a board during huddle that it's filled with little papers full of ideas. And these are just from my second shift, you know, technicians. And if it's happening at that magnitude at one facility, I can only imagine the amount of information that could be available. And it really made me start to wonder, why isn't that information coming up? Why are our idea pipeline starved in this field? Because if you look at our statistics, our field is saturated with people in it. There's not enough hospitals to employ the amount of people that want to do central sterile processing for whatever reason. So there has to be good ideas out there. So I really wanted to take advantage of the fact that I'm out there, I'm doing it, I'm failing, I'm succeeding. And maybe if someone sees me moving in that capacity, even broadcasting my biggest flops, and oh my God, there have been there have been some pretty great flops, let me tell you. And maybe if they saw it, it would help them find their own voice, because our field needs voices for evolution, because the microorganisms that we're fighting are evolving, and there's super bugs out there. So we need super techs, and they're out there. They got to figure out a way to get heard. And I want to offer that.
Sarah, that's true. Everybody needs to be able to have a voice, and especially if you want them to be truly engaged and have accountability for the success of the department or even the success of their own career, it's very critical. And all of that comes from great mentorship, which has been sort of an underlying theme throughout this whole interview to this point. And so what I'd like to do as we're wrapping up is allow you a moment to give a little bit of a shout out to a mentor of yours and talk about how they impacted your career and maybe emphasize this whole idea that mentorship is really critical for career growth and the success of the department as well.
So I believe mentorship is one of the best ways to not only learn how to promote yourself, but to promote your ideas. And it's almost a counteracting concept where you have to reach out to someone to teach you how to be yourself. But the point of use in your career is you. So mentorship is key. It's that first step in saying, I am worth someone's time to help develop me as an individual. And they're really going to help you invest in your own professionalism at that point in time where you're ready to take your CSS job and make it your CSS career. Because let's face it, central sterile processing can be someone's next big thing. It doesn't have to be a stepping stone into the hospital or into nursing school. This could be it. And it certainly was for me in my own story. I wanted to become surgical tech for a neurosurgeon in a veterinary hospital. And I took a central sterile processing course at my local community college just so I could figure out how to clean a Pearson rongeurs because they're so wonderful to clean. And it literally changed my life. And then I had this amazing opportunity to work with someone named David Jagrosi. He was my manager at a hospital that I worked for about 4 years. And he really gave me the inspiration to put the CSS in my success. And seeing him at that time, he was the acting president of Isham, and he was working as a manager in my facility, and he was giving inspirational huddles, and he was flying everywhere, but he still made time to make space to see my own potential and say, Sarah, you can do these things if you want to do these things. Because especially during that time, you know, I talked a big talk and I had lots of things to say, but my steps were very small. So I wasn't really walking. I was sort of dragging. I just had all these great things to say. And Dave really took the time to see my potential, see through my own nonsense that I had going on, and saw in me something that I had only hoped I could hone in on. Dave talks a lot about being in this war against microorganisms and how important it is to build an army. And you could see that in the way that he held himself in management. And I felt like I was part of a team when I was at that facility working with him. I felt like my job was important. I felt like everything I did had an impact, and I could see the impact, even though I never met the patients that my sets were used on. And that's phenomenal mentorship, is feeling your impact without having to see it.
Yeah, and a great mentor helps you see your potential even when you can't. That's phenomenal. What a great story. We obviously all know Dave quite well here on the show and have seen him speak and run into him at all the Isham annual conferences, if not regional shows as well. And I'm glad that you had that opportunity, and especially to be able to share it with everybody else, because there was something else that you said in there that I think is really critical, is getting across that you're somebody worth being mentored, that a mentor who has something to give you would want to invest time, and make sure always that you say thank you if you get that mentorship, so that they would be encouraged to mentor others and not just you or not just two people, but more and more beyond that. And I really liked the line, putting the CSS in your success. lots of great nuggets in this interview, Sarah, and we really can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing your perspectives today.
Oh, yeah, this has been such a stellar opportunity. I can't even believe that we're all on the phone right now. So thank you.
Our pleasure, honestly, it really is. And thank you for making sure that we got to a topic that somehow over 100 episodes in, we hadn't gotten to yet.
It's okay. Second shift, you know, it's a struggle. We'll all get through it together, just like we've been doing with Central Sterile out here.
That was Sarah Cruz, second shift sterile processing supervisor at Mid-State Medical Center. And Lindsay, I love the mentorship themes and I love the take-homes and a lot of cool little one-liners like the one I just mentioned as we were closing, but putting the CSS in your success. But I love hearing from people who are working on the front lines, and we've really gone out of our way this season, season 7, to get more and more folks who are actually doing the job day in and day out to get their voice. And I know we're getting lots of good tips and processes out to our listeners, which I think is just extremely valuable. And Sarah continues to set that standard on the show this season.
Justin, you're right. One of the things that I'm really excited for people to listen to not only surrounds the idea of those special dynamics that exist between second shift and other shifts, but just the idea that motivation and that passion and keeping that spark can really change the way you do your job and can change the way that you engage not only as an individual in your profession, but also as a team. And I hope that that's one of the takeaways that our listeners have from this episode. I think that they certainly will.
Yeah, I really love her passion. And one thing we know about passion is it's infectious. And so great mentorship and great passionate leaders tend to get more and more people on board pushing the global voice of sterile processing forward and helping us elevate the industry. So excellent guest on the show today. That's going to do it for this week's episode. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Lindsay, Hank, and myself, thank you for listening to this week's edition of Beyond Clean.